listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncnursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Hi everyone, I'm Riel Bennion, Senior Editor at Oncology Nursing News. June is Pride Month and we're putting a focus on improving cancer care for the LGBTQ population. For today's episode, we spoke with Kelly Haviland, a nurse research scientist and family nurse practitioner, on the difficulties LGBTQ patients face within the healthcare system, and how nurses can fight those injustices and move towards more personalized care. So tell me a little bit about your background on LGBTQ, especially when it comes to treating patients with cancer and, you know, your research and experience there.
Sure, absolutely. So my interest, my dissertation and my research work is in LGBTQ cancer care, specifically in screening, accessibility, and also in palliative care provision for these populations. I have become interested in this area as a gay woman when I heard a transgender man speak about his experience with being diagnosed with cancer and a delay in cancer care. And he talked about how his when he was diagnosed, and this was in the early 2000s, when he found a mass in his breast, he went to have a mammogram, and the radiologist never called him back with the results of his mammography. And so he was told by another person within that institution that he had a pretty aggressive form of breast cancer. And so when confronted, the radiologist was, and this is not at MSK, just so you know, I don't know which hospital it's at or institution. So it is at a hospital in the 2000s when in New York City. I just don't know which one. So then he had been he confronted this radiologist, and the radiologist said, "My first thought when I learned of your diagnosis was to send you to psychiatry." And so when I heard Jay Callio is his name, when I heard his story, he's a public figure. When I heard him, I just started crying. I started hysterically crying, and I felt something inside that felt so powerless and hopeless when I heard about this care and this case, and that he had multiple instances such as these throughout his life, and multiple familial difficulties throughout his life that prevented him from being successful in many ways, although he was successful. And just learning about those disparities and the marginalization of trans persons especially moved me. While I don't have the experience of being a trans person, I have the experience of being a lesbian woman presenting to healthcare with certain disparities as well. And so my interest became paramount, and I actually switched my dissertation studies to LGBTQ cancer care. And, you know, I had a proposal written in a whole different arena, and I changed everything part of the way through my studies and my PhD work. And I knew that my passion was being recognized, and this is really where I belonged. And so that was the initiation of my work. And you know, I worked with Jay, you know, for a few years after that, and he ended up dying of cancer, and it was a different cancer, a secondary cancer as a result. And his story he had recorded for palliative care for outlining the challenges of a trans man receiving palliative cancer, you know, palliative care in the cancer arena. So that was kind of my foray into this work.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing. So Have you seen things get better since, let's say, Jay's diagnosis? You said that was in, I guess, earlier 2000s. Have you seen things get better? And where do we still need to go? And what can clinicians do to get there? Your nurses, your doctors, hospital staff, everybody.
Thanks for that question. And I think it's complicated. On the one hand, the recognition that disparities and marginalization exist in these populations is becoming more forthright. And at the same time, there are over, I think, 400 different legislative policies that have been brought forth just this year against transgender persons. So I think while we see issues are becoming more discussed, we also see many laws that are and many legislative policies that are coming into play that are prohibitive. And so I think it's a difficult answer. I do think that we have a long way to go in implementing and integrating sexual and gender minority education throughout all of our both nursing and physician assistant, physician associate, and physician colleagues education. And while we need to have specific courses that outline disparities in LGBTQ in populations, we also need to integrate into language, LGBTQ patients. So, for example, when we're doing case reviews, case studies, part of the demographics should naturally just be some non-heterosexual and some non-cisgender person. And so I think that that's part of where we need to go, in addition to providing safe environments, research. We don't have research, we don't collect federal research for the demographic of sexual orientation and gender identification. So we don't know numbers. We have some data with some of these national registries, but the SEER doesn't collect sexual and gender minority research. So we don't know what numbers we have in our general population for risk factors, for cancer surveillance, for cancer prevalence. We have smaller studies and some state-based studies on the BRFA data set from the CDC. So we can make inferences based on those data, but we don't have numbers like we do for the heterosexual and cisgender populations. So I think that's another area that we really need to be able to look into and open up for us to assess and really see what's happening. In addition, creating safe and welcome environments in our institutions, in our clinical arenas. And what does that mean? Having welcoming environments means having visual representation, physical representation of different, different types of people. And we're not just talking about, same-sex couples or transgender persons, but all different people. And I think looking at the intersectionality of not just gender, sexual orientation, but race, ethnicity, and cultural diversity also is so important. And with those ideas in mind, ensuring that we are creating individualized, personalized cancer care to every being. And that entails asking about sexual orientation and gender identification, making sure our electronic medical records have sex assigned at birth and gender identity. So the two-part question.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.